If you're the person who says, "So I was listening to a podcast the other day," then this podcast is for you. I'm Suzanne Whitman, and welcome to Podcast Therapy. I love listening to podcasts and sharing them with my friends. But more than that, podcasts have been a place for inspiration, knowledge, and even comfort when I needed to hear my favorite podcasters' voices. I'll highlight the best of the best, traveling the podcast globe so you don't have to. Each week, I'll either talk about my favorite podcast, have some conversations and some laughs with friends about their favorite podcasts, and even interview the podcasters themselves. So join me through this journey as we discover why podcasts have become so meaningful to all of us.
Perfect.
Hey, Adam, how are you?
I am spectacular. How are you, Suzanne?
I'm good. So I'm so glad that we could do this. To preface this conversation, like I said, you and I have great conversations. Usually I'm driving because that's when I'm able to talk. And then we have a tendency, both of us, to get kind of long-winded, which is fun. But why don't you start off by telling everybody who you are, what you do, and then we'll get into your favorite podcast.
Awesome. So yes, hi everybody. I am Adam Belcarelli. I, in my daytime life during the week, I'm a transportation planner in East Central Wisconsin regional planning. And all the rest of the time, I do all kinds of other things. I'm a dad, I'm a husband. I run a nonprofit called 14 and 3, a leadership development nonprofit. I have a side nonprofit project called Heroes of Oshkosh that I'm one of the founding members of, and all kinds of other stuff. I sit on different boards for the city. I sit on nonprofit boards. I do all kinds of fun stuff like that.
And later this afternoon, you're going to head out and do Lego, right?
The Lego League. Yes. I am also the coach of my son's Lego League team, which is 6, 7, 8, 9-year-olds that have a build project over 12 weeks. So yeah, they're about halfway through that.
So what are they building?
So the mission for Lego League is called Cargo Connect. And so they have to learn about like the supply chain, which is surprisingly topical for like adult world, you know, that kind of thing. And so they're learning about how products get sorted before they can be delivered to people.
You know, I've talked to so many people about supply chain. I'm just fascinated by that. I when you go to the grocery store and you notice that you can't find ground coffee or peanut butter, you start to worry, right? Your everyday life is falling apart. So I keep talking to people about it, and I don't think they want to talk to me about it because they're like, "Oh, why is she talking about supply chain? Like, what business are we in here?" But anyway, you do a lot of things. And you also, I mean, something that I find really interesting is, now, are you on a committee or the board of the new food co-op that has been started in your area?
So the Oshkosh Food Co-op is awesome. And I recommend everyone check it out. I am a committee chair for the food justice team. And one of our missions on that is to help people access food, whether they live in a food desert or they are themselves food insecure, but then also help the co-op itself and the mission become a more inclusive organization.
Okay, so with the co-op, can anybody go shopping there?
Yes, everybody is welcome to shop there. And if you want to become a member, then you can participate in some of the extra events and a lot of the other things that come with being a co-op member. But shopping is open to everybody and encouraged.
And this is not something unique to the area. There have been many, many other places, correct, that have started co-ops, because I think whoever the founding members of this co-op had looked at other states, right, that did this. And
so there's not a lot of them, but they do exist, definitely. In Wisconsin, I believe there's maybe four or five others that are grocery co-ops. Okay. There are a bunch of other co-ops that are farms or there's a bike repair co-op. There's a, you know, a bunch of other things around. One of the most common sort of co-op types is actually a credit union. They run on that same model. So yeah, it's not unique, but the grocery space is, it has different mission, a slightly different mission than some of the other ones.
Can we start a podcast co-op?
You know what? I'm sure if we Googled it, they're out there.
I don't even know what that means. Then. Like, what would that look like? I don't even know what that means.
So yeah, so if you look up the, I think it's five pillars, might be seven pillars. I always forget that are what a co-op is based around. Okay. It's those pillars. Definitely something to look into for anything, any endeavor you're thinking of starting. Check out the pillars of co-ops, and that's a great place to start.
See, and this is what I mean. Like when we talk, and I think when you'll introduce the podcast, one of the many podcasts that you listen to, it's that we could just talk about anything all day long, right? Like, what have you been doing lately? Yeah. Oh, I don't know, Legos and co-ops and nonprofits and helping the homeless and so not finding my peanut butter.
Right. One of the things that I value hugely in the world is non sequitur. I love things that don't seem connected, but eventually I believe in non sequitur, but also I believe in the inherent interconnectedness of all things. And sometimes that gets a little, you know, where did this conversation start? Where are we going? Kinds of, you know, concern, but it's something I value a lot. So it's fun.
Which is the perfect segue to the podcast that you listen to, because I did listen to three episodes and it was fun because you're looking at the titles of these episodes and you're like, what on earth? So let's have you introduce this so that everybody knows what we're talking about.
Yes. So when you asked me, what's my favorite podcast? I immediately freaked out because I was like, well, here's seven of them. But as you insisted, I narrowed down to one. So here I chose The Anthropocene Reviewed by John Green. And it is not being made as regularly currently, but it is one of the podcasts that when there's a new episode, it's the first one on my list. Like no matter what else is going on, I make sure to take that one in because it scratches that itch of something completely wild that I never would have been thinking about. And then two things. And so it's always two different things that he puts in there. And for him, they're not inherently connected. They're just things. And so the subheader, I guess. So it's The Anthropocene Reviewed. And then it is Aspects of the Human-Centered Planet Rated on a 5-Star Scale.
Yes. And I consider myself somewhat well-read, but I did have to look up Anthropocene because I was like, what does that mean? I have not heard that word before. So for smarter people out there, they probably already know, but I didn't.
I think a lot of folks wouldn't know that. So it's worth explaining or worth mentioning is the human epoch. Yeah.
Right. And he defines it also as how humans have changed the landscape of the globe, right? So
absolutely.
Which is completely fascinating. And like you said, the non sequitur part of it of just going off in some weird tangent about different things. And so I did listen to, I think the first one I listened to was, it was called like Wonder and Sunsets. And the reason I chose that one is because years ago, so let's get into some storytelling here. Years ago, my husband and I went to parent-teacher conferences. And we met with one of our kids' science teachers, and my husband kept saying, but does she ever wonder? And I kind of like looked at him like, what are you talking about? Like, I don't understand. Like, what are you talking about? And I heard a different podcast with John Green being interviewed, and he talked about and used the word wonder. And then again, he used it in this particular one. And then he was talking about sunsets, which I just happened to like sunsets. So what are you going to say about this? So he talks about that. I actually sent that to my husband, said, it's not very long. You need to listen to it, but this is like the perfect podcast for you. So he is a fan of John Green. So that helps. And so, and our kids, you know, we're reading his books, and I kind of went through a little stint a couple years ago where my eldest, who is a big reader, I would read the books that she would read. And so, which is why I know about The Fault in Our Stars and, you know, The Hunger Games and things like that before they came out and became movies. So I knew all about this stuff because I was thinking about maybe, again, non sequitur, writing a book about the books that I read with my daughter, which has gone nowhere. So, but anyway, tell me.
Nowhere yet. It's gone nowhere yet.
Who knows? Who knows where this could go? So do you have a favorite one of those that was, that you were really interested in or that you can talk about or?
You know what? I didn't even think about that. Let me pull it up because I could probably come up with one pretty quick.
And I know the I ended up, because it was the first one was really interesting, I ended up listening to another one. I don't remember what the two topics were, but one topic was Diet Dr. Pepper.
Yeah.
Which I was like, oh my gosh, I need to tell one of my coworkers who loves Diet Dr. Pepper the story about Diet Dr. Pepper, because I didn't know. So super interesting. So for those
that
out there,
that is a great one.
Please listen to that one. It's fascinating.
Right. He does one about pennies.
Okay.
And yeah. Yeah. So it's Pennies and Piggly Wiggly is one from 2018. And I grew up in Illinois. I'm originally from Northern Illinois. So pennies have always held a special place in my heart in a way that is the existence of the penny is absurd. All right. Okay. So, and it's one of those things that most people, like normal people, would never give any thought to. But a penny costs more than a penny to make.
Okay.
All right.
How much does it cost?
I think it's like a 1.06 cents or something like that. It's a tiny little bit more to make a penny than what a penny costs.
Does it have something to do with what it's made out of?
A little bit, the but it's more just the, again, going back to supply chain, the way we get the copper and the zinc and the things, and then the design and the printing and the shipping them out to banks and all that kind of thing, and getting them out in the world. And then even on the back end, when banks get a penny that's past its useful life, and they have to then melt it back down and, you know, take it out of circulation, that whole process is costs more than a penny for each penny. And we print billions of pennies. Like, there's, if you think of the number of pennies out in the world.
Yeah.
And so this is a really interesting just sort of take on why the penny exists.
Okay.
And the impact and the cultural impact of, you know, what we think of the lucky penny and the, you know, all of these aspects about pennies that most people, it's so, a penny is a forgettable thing.
Okay.
But at the same time, so growing up, my grandmother loved wheat pennies.
I don't even know what that is.
Oh, okay. So a wheat penny is, and I don't remember the dates, but it's essentially a U.S. copper penny.
Okay.
That was printed, I think it was the 50s or 60s. And so instead of having the Capitol building on the back, it has two pieces of wheat and it says 1 cent in the middle.
Okay. I think I've seen a few of those. Okay. Yeah.
So my grandmother and here's the thing. She told us she loved them. She may have just been having your grandkids, you know, keep occupied for some period of time, looking through jars of pennies.
Okay.
That could also be a possibility. But if we would then give her a wheat penny, she'd give us a nickel.
Oh.
And so I was like, this is the greatest investment of my time as a 5-7 year old, whatever, you know.
Right.
Like I'll dig through jars of pennies and coins until I find the special one.
Oh my gosh.
So I've always had a connection to pennies.
Yeah.
But as I've grown up and learned about, you know, monetary policy and how money works, and this concept that the cost of a penny is more than a penny, mm-hmm. It was sort of my introduction to the nonsensical nature of money.
Mm.
And how so much of the things we think of as the underpinning of society are made up.
Well, you know, and this topic could lead us to cryptocurrency if we really wanted to go there, right? And the whole idea between it, why is there even value to a dollar bill or a penny? Because we've given it that. And as that they're trying to do right now with cryptocurrency is, can we give cryptocurrency that value? Like, that whole thing blows my mind. I've been trying to understand it and I don't, again, because I'm not the smartest person. But I had driven to a nearby city and I went in the gas station. I saw a sign outside the gas station and it said, we have a Bitcoin ATM. And I'm like, I don't understand. Because why do you need an ATM for Bitcoin? Isn't this virtual currency? Do you know anything about that?
So I think there's a couple of different ways that does operate.
Okay.
So the one would be that you can make a deposit of either your paycheck or a regular check or cash.
Okay.
And you can deposit it into the ATM.
Okay.
And the ATM will then convert it to crypto.
Okay.
Which then goes into your account.
Got it.
The other way that this can work is if you have a crypto account, mm-hmm. and whatever coin you have it in.
Right.
And you need to buy something at a cash register or from a person who doesn't have crypto.
It'll convert it.
You can then sell a fraction of your coin on the, you know, in the inner workings of that ATM, it sells it into the market and then spits out US cash.
Blows
and then you can use
mind.
That to buy your bag of chips.
That's crazy.
Well, so the funny thing is, it's no crazier than my employer sending my paycheck electronically to my bank.
Right.
And then me being able to use my ATM card to get, you know, eggs. Like there's no, yeah.
I'm sure that, you know, I had this conversation with someone else, like maybe the barter system is just easier. Adam,
well, so
what can you teach me?
The barter system is even more nonsensical because every product then has a different value to different people.
Right.
And so, yeah, so there's no way I would know enough people to, this is another old podcast and I'm actually,
Go there. Keep going. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. Okay. So there's a podcast about the number two pencil.
Oh, okay.
All right. And I'm trying to remember which podcast it was. But it may have been 99% Invisible, but it might have been a show they featured that's some other. Okay, so the idea, though, is that no one company is able to do all of the steps of the process to independently make a number two pencil.
Hmm.
So even the pencil Ticonderoga, I think is the, right? That's the name of the pencil maker.
Sure.
All right. They don't mine the lead or make the, you know, graphite or that kind of thing. They don't grow the trees that go into the, you know, slicer, you know, tree cutter upper, whatever you want to call it, the sawmill. They don't do all of those stages to, and they don't grow the rubber trees and make the eraser or all, you know, so all of those things. They don't make the paint that is the yellow that's on the pencil, all that kind of thing.
I'm surprised we haven't banned pencils.
Right.
Right. Hasn't someone done that yet? The trees and the lead.
So this is the funny thing is it takes this whole group of not only manufacturers, but also growers and miners and craftspeople and this whole ecosystem to create what we might be considered the most basic technology, right? Like the simplest thing is a pencil. And so to think of all of the coordination that has to happen, there is no one business that does that. All of them, all businesses, all entities are inherently interconnected.
Which again takes us back to supply chain.
Exactly.
Oh, look how we did that.
Yeah, it's beautiful. So yeah, so that's the both the inherent interconnectedness of all things, but also that idea of you never know what's going to connect to what.
Right.
And so I take such delight in the non sequitur of a lot of these, what podcasts bring me. And so that's one of the reasons generally I love them.
You should do, I'm sure it exists. You should do a podcast like the whatever, 6 degrees of separation between whatever.
Right? That would be a great idea. Absolutely. A supply chain podcast about, yeah.
The manufacturers would love it. Okay, so go back to, so the first, yeah. The one topic was pennies, and then the other was Piggly Wiggly. I want to know what he said about Piggly Wiggly.
Okay, so Piggly Wiggly is another thing, again, and so my first job while I was in high school was as a bagger and then a cashier at a grocery store.
Okay.
Now, I didn't happen to work in a Piggly Wiggly because I grew up in Northern Illinois. We didn't have them, but the grocery store idea is one that I've always been fascinated by and I just really like. And so he was talking about in this podcast, sort of the history of this specific grocery store chain called Piggly Wiggly. Mm-hmm. And it essentially came about when the owner of a grocery store had to change the name. And I don't remember what the original name was, but he had to change the name of it. And so he came up with something absurd.
And, you know, something really? That had,
yeah. And so that, but it was memorable. Mm-hmm. And so because, and so this was in the probably early 1900s, 1920s, maybe something like that, mm-hmm. maybe 30s even, that he started it, that there wasn't like marketing the way we think of marketing for grocery stores. Mm-hmm. It was just that's, you know, somebody in town hopefully would get enough of the, you know, suppliers to bring all their bread and eggs and cheese to one building and then you can go buy it. And so there's the different innovations that happened going from the old like feed store or the I'm general trying to think in the store. Westerns, in Western movies.
Like a general movies, store or mercantile.
Yeah, where, yeah. So there is the old way that would you go up to the counter
right.
and you would tell the person, here's my grocery list. Mm-hmm. And they would go in the back and mm-hmm. they would get all of your groceries and they would put them in a bag or in a sack or in a box mm-hmm. and they would hand you your groceries and you'd walk away.
Okay.
That was the original way we used to do things. Or mm-hmm. if you were getting big things, they would just carry them right out to your wagon or out to your, you know, car, your pickup or whatever, and they'd send you back to your farm, and you would, there were not aisles.
Right.
And so one of the innovations was to put all of the items that would be in a storeroom and just let you walk up and down the aisles and get the stuff, like a self-serve, mm-hmm. was not the way grocery stores started.
Can I say that I'm having flashbacks to Little House on the Prairie?
Yeah.
Right? Mr. Olson, right? Didn't he own the store? Do you remember
what
that?
Was that?
Did you watch Little House on the Prairie?
I never watched Little House on the Prairie. I'm aware of it, but I did not watch it. That's funny.
So much for what I was saying. But anyway, there it was back then, and there was Mr. Olson, I believe, who owned the general store. And yes, so that's what I'm envisioning. As you're saying, the person's coming up and saying, I want this. And they also had it where I'm sure that you could have like a tab, a running tab or something like that. Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. Yeah. And I guess, you know, who thinks about these things? Like, right. We go to the grocery store. We don't even think about it, but at the same time, it's like, these are the things, these are like the inventions that people come up with, right. That are just part of our daily lives that, I mean, there isn't a day that goes by that if I don't hear something or read about something, I'm always like, oh, like, how did that get started? Or where did that come from? Like, but that's me. And then I think there's got to be more people out there like me who just continually likes to wonder and say, how did this come about? So this is kind of the premise, right? About with John Green's podcast is just saying, here's some history on stuff that you probably never even think about or talk about, but you should, or should you? Does anybody really care? Other than the two of us.
Right. Yeah. I don't know that anyone should care. I think it's endlessly entertaining. And so, yeah, you find the things that, like I said, scratch that itch for you, or you find that what tickles you, and you know, you go with it.
Okay. So two things out of that from just what you said. One is those kind of quotes, right? You know, these old adages that are out there, because I know that when our youngest daughter, I don't know, when she was little, like I would say things like, oh, we don't need to keep up with the Joneses. And she'd be like, what does that mean? And, you know, so I'd say all these things and I'm like, wow, this stuff is real. Like it's, you know, location, location, location. That is still truth, right? It hasn't changed. But the other thing I wanted to say, because that's just silly, is that, you know, I always want to know, why do people listen to a particular podcast? But for you, because you like a lot of different podcasts, what is the appeal about podcasts for you, especially for those who are out there who haven't really delved into the world of podcasts? What is the appeal for you, as opposed to, we all know that everybody is binge watching Netflix and Hulu and Apple TV and on and on and on and on, which is a whole other thing which I need to talk to someone about, right? But we can binge on podcasts too. How did this all come about for you?
So the general idea is, I'm old, is what I like to tell people. So I love NPR. Like I've loved that format. And, but at the same time, a lot of talk radio or things that, when you can't, you know, when you're in an area for, I used to drive a lot and drive around the country a lot and just for fun. Like that would just be things I would go and do and take adventures. And a lot of the times I'd be in areas where you can't get a particular, you know, radio station, or you just have to like scan through the dial. And anytime I could find an NPR station, I loved it, because I would listen to whatever stories they were telling or, you know, what was going on there. But sometimes you can't. And so if you find other, and so I do like sports radio. And so that was the other thing where, you know, people will be talking. But if I'm driving down to Kansas and I'm from Northern Illinois, you know, they're not going to be talking about the Chicago Cubs that I'm interested in. You know, they're going to talk about the Cardinals or the Royals or whatever. So I would still sometimes listen because it's interesting and sports related. So that was fun. But also then sometimes I'd be like, oh, this just isn't my thing. And I'd keep looking. But talk radio generally is either far too conservative for me or just out there, just, you know, not connected to any reality that I'm interested in. And so that didn't scratch that itch for me. Then when the podcast came along, I could then make my own NPR station, essentially. You know, I could find the things that were people passionate about something that I wanted to learn why they were passionate about it, you know, and it was something that I didn't know about or wanted to learn more. So there was that educational piece, but not so curriculum based, you know, it was more of a, let's hear people talk about what they're excited about.
Right.
And then as I started to be involved in more and more things, I wanted to say, okay, I want to surround myself with people who love something and they're passionate about something and they're doing something that gives them energy, that excites them, that drives them. And so what I've learned from podcasts is that no matter the topic and no matter my interest in the topic, if somebody loves the thing they're talking about, I can relate to it some way. And it energizes me to hear them super excited about crochet, you know, or water polo or whatever. Like, those are things that I don't do or wouldn't do necessarily, but
right.
When someone is super jazzed about a thing and they're into it,
right.
I can learn, I can be interested and excited about it. There's a book called Paddle Your Own Canoe.
Okay.
The guy who plays Ron Swanson, whose name just flew out of my head, he's a comedian.
Yeah, Oberman.
Not Oberman, but something like that. Yes, and everyone on the radio, everyone listening right now, is shouting out his name.
I know who you're talking about.
Yeah. So that he talks about woodworking.
Okay.
And so he is an actor and a comedian and all these other things. But he also is an amazing woodworker and woodsmith.
Really?
And he'll make tables and canoes and, you know, all this stuff. And so he talks about woodworking in a way that he relates everything else in his life to how someone would act within a shop.
Okay.
And to me, that is so cool.
Mm-hmm.
To care that much about a thing and be that passionate about your thing, even if it's not something anyone else necessarily or others, you know, you're not known for, or,
right.
You know, they might not have that interest in.
Well, and I think that, you know, you're hitting upon something that, again, I have to find someone else to talk about this with, is the idea of energy, the idea of passion, because it can change, it can be varied, and it is contagious. And I agree with you. There's nothing worse than being around people who are just bleh, right? Just, you know, they're not excited or, you know, because there are people out there whose lives are very, I don't know, traditional, and they do the job they do because of, this is also another topic, healthcare reasons, as opposed to I'm passionate about my job. And I just keep saying to people, it's like, if we could all do what we actually wanted to do and make a living at it and also have healthcare, what kind of people would we be? Would there be less crappy people? That's what I always say. Would there be less crappy people in this world? Because I've met a lot of crappy people.
So, yeah. So this is a topic I really do love, because it actually goes towards some other bit here. And that is robots.
Mm.
I am super excited about the automation of everything.
Okay.
And this might be a bit of a rabbit hole.
Okay.
But here we go.
Okay, let's go there.
All right. So I use a wheelchair, and I have a nerve disorder. So for me, my legs are really weak because all the signals that my brain sends to my muscles, a bunch of them get lost or confused on the way to my toes. Or okay. On the way back up. And so over the years, that disconnect or that frazzled electrical system has made my legs weaker. In eighth grade, before I went in the wheelchair, I would just be walking along and then all of a sudden my knees would give out.
Mm.
And that was particularly bad when you're on the stairs, you know? And so after two or three times falling down the stairs, I got really good at it. But my mom was like, no, you can't do this anymore. We need to find a different way before you, you know, murder yourself. And so I started using the wheelchair. And one of the things that one of the many things that that taught me or showed me was that there are lots of times and situations where our body isn't the best mechanism for conveying us through the world, conveying our thoughts and ideas and ourselves through the world. Okay.
Okay.
There are things that we can contribute independent of our body.
Okay.
All right. So from there, I started to learn about, how cool would it be to have like an Iron Man suit. Okay. That kind of thing.
Okay.
So that I could take my body out of the situation and have the suit be doing the things. All right. And then I started to learn about these brain scans that they were doing. So here's the funny story. So I think it was at Berkeley back in the 90s, they were doing brain scans on monkeys and then giving them a joystick, and the joystick would control a robotic arm and it would pick up a banana and drop it in the chute for the monkey. All right.
Okay.
And so when the monkey figured this out, like this is how the joystick operates the arm, mm-hmm. the brain scan would then see what areas of the monkey's brain lit up.
Mm-hmm.
And it was always the same pattern when they were operating the joystick. So eventually what the researchers were able to do is unplug the joystick. The monkeys would still use the joystick and the robotic arm would still do its thing and pick up the banana and drop it in the chute and the monkey would eat the banana.
Mm-hmm.
Well, eventually, it didn't take long, the monkeys realized the joystick wasn't working. It was just their thought.
Oh.
So the monkeys stopped using the joystick and controlled the robotic arms just by thinking about it.
Whoa.
Which is weird.
Whoa.
Right?
This is the AI world that freaks me out.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, so then... once they figured out, and since the 90s, then we've started doing functional MRIs and we've started doing all this more detailed studies of how the brain mm-hmm. operates and what areas light up and why things are connected to what. Yeah. But it's still largely mysterious, you know, and yes. there's a lot of unknowns. So I read this article and I sent it to a bunch of my friends from high school. And said, how cool would it be if I could get robot legs
mm-hmm.
that in place of my non-working legs?
Mm-hmm.
And all of my buddies, because this was all emails back and forth back then, they all wrote back sarcastic, smart-ass answer. And the first one was, what if the monkeys want to go somewhere you don't want to go? All right. So, I was like, thanks, guys. You're not helpful. So that was sort of my introduction to the robot monkey legs idea. All right.
That's a new name for another podcast. You can have that one.
Thanks. Yeah. So, all right. So then I was like, okay, seriously though, this is a really cool idea. And then I started to say, okay, if the brain, if we can have technology that the brain can operate other stuff, that sort of makes, you know, the sci-fi idea is totally possible.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's all these things about military exoskeletons, and it's a fun rabbit hole to go down at some point. And I was like, okay, that could solve that whole problem.
Mm-hmm.
Then in reading about that kind of stuff and robotics and AI and all that, I was introduced to a guy named Ray Kurzweil. Now, Ray Kurzweil is a fascinating inventor and genius and all this other stuff. And he invented... many years ago, probably 40 or more years ago now, he invented a little reader. It's a little pen scanner
mm-hmm.
for blind people.
Okay.
So it's a little scanner that you can run across a book or a newspaper,
mm-hmm.
and it will read you the words out loud.
Oh, okay.
And again, this was back in the 70s, I believe, that he's inventing this, and it's before, you know, scanners and computers and all these, you know,
mm-hmm.
Dragon reader or whatever, you know, any of that kind of stuff. So this was just, he was probably, I'm trying to remember if he was even 20 years old at the time when he invented it.
Okay.
And so then since then, he just kept on coming up with these potentially life-changing ideas and that. So one of the things that he wrote about that I read a book by him, called Age of the Spiritual Machines.
Mm-hmm.
And I read that when I was in college, and it was all about this idea called the singularity. And to him, the singularity is a point in time when we are able to download all of our brain function into an artificial system. So like a hard drive.
Okay.
Now there's all kinds of technological reasons why we can't do this yet. And there's a lot of philosophy behind what happens when we do that. And there's ethics involved and there's all these other interesting pieces to it. All right. But essentially, if we can take all of our synapse connections, everything our brain does now,
mm-hmm.
and transfer that into a computer of some kind,
mm-hmm. like
if and when that's possible, that moment is what he calls the singularity.
So now, I hate to break it to you. The Avengers already did that. Yeah. It might have been Captain America or the Avengers with the weird scientist guy that I can't remember his name, right? I mean, you're a Marvel fan, right? What was that? The guy, you know, I'm talking about, right? He worked with, what's his name? I don't even know. Red Skull or whatever. They did that. So, like his brain was in the computer. And then,
yes,
and
yeah.
then Black Widow and Captain America found it.
Oh, what is his name in that though? But yes, the guy with the round glasses.
Yes.
Zoloft? Is it something like that? Yeah, Doug Zoloft.
Or that's a depression drug.
Right. Yeah, no, not Zoloft. Dr. Zola, I think is what his name is.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. So that is the singularity. All right. So now the singularity is useful if we want to ever travel. Mm-hmm. farther than our bodies would make, like to other planets or other solar systems or okay. anything.
Okay.
If our consciousness,
mm-hmm.
you know, every thought and feeling and everything that happens in our brain
yeah.
is in a robot that can last much longer and not need oxygen and all this other stuff.
Right.
We can then send ourselves in this artificial form somewhere else to like colonize another galaxy or whatever. So, So this is like the way out there sci-fi crazy stuff that happens when we start to think about the possibilities of technology.
But you know, and right? It's not really that crazy because you think about right now, I mean, like the ocular, right? The glasses and to be able to feel, I have not tried this myself, but to put those on and then feel like you're at the whatever Wall of China or whatever, right? Great Wall of China, or you're somewhere else, right? And you feel like you're actually there. Have you ever done that?
The virtual reality? Yes.
Yes, you have. Does it really feel yeah. like you're there?
Or so not. Yes, it does. It absolutely does.
Okay.
And the funny reason why I that I've read about is our brains are willing to accept a lot of possibilities as perfectly real.
Mm.
And so when you're in a virtual reality
mm-hmm.
and you have so many of the visual and auditory sensations,
mm-hmm.
our consciousness, our brain thinks it's being fed real, true information and it needs to react to that. So if you're in virtual reality and there's a bear in front of you
mm-hmm.
no matter how much you try to convince yourself that you are not in danger, your autonomic response, your sweat and your heart rate and all those things will react like there's a bear in front of you. Like that's one of the things that our brain technology has leapfrogged a piece of our consciousness that way, in that it's very difficult for us to bring ourselves back to reality of that's not really dangerous. We have to actually take the thing off or reset something.
Yeah.
Because our brain has a hard time knowing the difference.
Oh, that's really interesting. Cause you know, I do like sci-fi stuff. Like I have this love for sci-fi where I'm just like completely sucked in and frightened all at the same time.
Well, and so here's the other thing that's really interesting about that to me is it doesn't actually take virtual reality to do that sometimes. Because if you're the kind of person who can get so immersed in what you're reading, you can have the exact same effect. Or if you're
or watching IMAX a movie. Theater, right.
Yes.
Which absolutely. Is why.
So you can.
Why during Endgame I cried like 3 times.
What was that?
During Endgame I cried 3 times.
Right?
I'm sure it's not a spoiler anymore. I'm sure everybody knows the story if they've watched it, but yeah, no, being immersed, I get it. Wow. So we really like went somewhere else in a galaxy far, far away. So another time we'll talk about that, but hey, Adam, this was really fun and we'll have to like pick another one and you'll have to come back and talk about that and fill my brain with lots of strange ideas. And, you know, now I won't be able to sleep at night because I'll be all like, is this real or is it just, you know, in my head? So, but too fun. Adam, thank you for sharing and you have a good rest of your day and then promise me you'll come back and we'll have more talks and more laughs.
It has absolutely been my pleasure. I love our conversations. And then, yeah, we'll come back and talk about some of the leadership development. We'll talk about all kinds of other fun stuff.
Of course. All right, Adam, thank you so much.
You bet. We'll talk soon.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening. For details about this episode, check out the highlights on my Twitter feed. Follow me wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you like the show, please leave me a review on Apple Podcasts. I'm also on Instagram at suzanne.wittman. That's suzanne.wittman. So feel free to DM me if you have questions. See you next week and make time for some podcast therapy.